Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the men's room.
Forget it, man, and get Ruby Countdown. Shake this square world and blast off for Kicksville. The drippers, the grasshoppers, the hip ones, all gathered in secrecy and flying eyes a kite.
You're listening to The Men's Room with Miles and Thrill.
We tell the welcoming listeners now in New Orleans, the Bayou 95.7. Also, our friends at Rock 105, Chattanooga's Rock Station in beautiful Chattanooga, Tennessee, and our friends at Z-Rock 103 in Lexington, Kentucky. Big show for you today. Bad jokes on the way. The return of Ted versus the FCC. And as we have a plane that plummeted nearly 30,000 feet in 7 minutes, people were texting their family members, their friends, saying, this is it. We are all going to die. That plane did make an emergency landing in Tampa. Our question, what scared you to death? 844-999-OLA.
Hello, Terry. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola.
Hola.
Hey, so I've talked to you guys before. I spent 4.5 years on a submarine.
And that's still stupid to me.
Thanks for the call.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That is scary. Yeah,
all right. Go. Okay.
Yeah, there's a few. I've been in a couple of, there's a couple of situations where we were uncomfortable. I've only been scared once.
And why?
Because you heard them singing.
Right. No, we were running fast and deep, which means we were down basically at what's called test depth. I'll say it's 800 feet for the sake of conversation. Doing as fast as we can travel. We had a mechanic on the boat who was trying to do one of his procedures that's a weekly procedure. Part of that procedure is shutting off an oil valve to what's called a reduction gear. The reduction gear is the only part of the boat that we don't own. It's a big, giant gear. If you damage it, it's a bad thing. People go to jail. It's bad. He forgot to do his valve lineup when he got done doing the procedure, which means he forgot to go back and reset everything to how it's supposed to be for normal operation, got himself distracted, walked away, and left it that way for over an hour.
What happens?
Just like the transmission in your car, if you don't have oil, you can damage the gears.
Sure.
A bunch of alarms go off in what's called maneuvering. When those alarms go off, we have to do what's called stop and lock the shaft, which means you lock the propeller, the big giant shaft that goes through the boat to the propeller, you lock it. So we are as deep as we can go, running as fast as we can go, and all of a sudden, we drop propulsion, and our captain orders us to go to the surface. So we start to go up, but we don't have propulsion now. As we're going up, we're losing speed, and part of the immediate reactions for the boat to, when we do that is we pull the chicken switches, which is the emergency blow. Blows all the water out of the bow.
I got some of that hidden in a nightstand next to the bed.
Just in case Vegas calls.
Right? It's what causes, you've all seen the Hunt for Red October when the boat jumps up out of the water.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The emergency blow.
Never knew that.
And did you guys, were you able to do it?
The chief, it's two large switches above the chief's stations. One's forward, one's aft. He grabs the forward one, misses aft, pulls the forward one, and blows all the water out of the forward part of the boat. So all of a sudden, we go from about a 10-degree up angle to a 30-degree up angle. And we don't have any propulsion. So we start sliding backwards.
Sweet.
How long are you going backwards? So it's like a plane that's stalled, right?
For about... long enough for our engineer to get rolled out of his rack, hit the deck, take whatever time he took to kind of assess his situation from in his stateroom, call back to the engine room and tell them, forget about the alarms, unlock the shaft, and get us the F out of here. Okay. So we can get back to the surface.
How long does this entire process take?
About 20 minutes.
All right.
And by the time we got propulsion again and got moving forward again, we were about 500 feet below the lowest deck we are authorized to go.
Let me ask you this. If you're in a submarine and the submarine sinks and you can send out a distress call, what are the honest odds that anyone could come out there and rescue your ass?
It is not a rescue. It is a recovery.
I was going to say, how many submarines are in the bottom of the ocean floor with a full crew right now? 200?
There's two types of submarines. Fast attacks. I don't know how many fast attack boats we have.
I'm talking about that are on the bottom of the ocean floor that right. They could not. It should have been a salvage operation.
That are just sitting that got crushed. None at the moment. Well, okay. There were two in World War II.
All right. I'm just wondering how many are out there that we don't know about with a full crew sitting on the bottom of the ocean.
I think I'd rather be on a plane that's going to crash than be in a sub that I know is just going to keep plummeting down.
Because I thought maybe they're saying about the tunnel, like the tunnel that you guys were talking about between France and England, or the tunnel that's over in Norfolk that goes to the Virginia Peninsula. Like, okay, let's say the water did come crashing in.
Yeah, it's not cool.
How far is it to swim to the top?
You're dead.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how far down is the tunnel? Because you can never make it to the top.
Well, chances are the tunnel will probably collapse on top of you. Either way, you're not getting out.
Don't you think there's some kind of like bubble suit that you could get in a submarine or something that just shoots you up? You know what I mean? Like the rocket ship that they... If they did,
he wouldn't call it a recovery.
You know, like when Leia gives R2-D2 the plans?
Yeah, they shoot his ass out of there.
Don't they have something like that?
I don't believe so.
Okay. That seems like a severe oversight. You know what I mean?
To me, that's why I'd never want to be in a sub. Like, people get on planes.
It's also one of those that would be peaceful. Whereas, like, the plane, things are beeping. You know you're going to crash. Like, the
what
sub.
Is your, look,
I'm basing this on watching
beeping.
The Hunt for Red October.
I don't think it's peaceful. I think it's quiet.
Yeah.
I think on the plane, like, yes, there's a lot of chaos. Because you might as well get it out of your system because you got, 3 minutes before it's over. The submarine, you plumb to, no one's going to come rescue you.
How long
are you done? Like, I'm not feeling at peace, personally.
I don't know if that's from Hunt for Red October or Crimson Tide, but like most people, that's how I have all my submarine knowledge.
100% of my submarine knowledge is from those two movies.
Turn on the Caterpillar system, can't hear a thing, that's when it goes quiet. What scared you to death? 844-999-OLA.
I mean, it's got Denzel, Gene Hackman, solid movie.
Sure, both of them are.
Hello, Wyatt. Welcome to the men's room.
What's up? Hola.
Let it go.
All right, so I got a story for you guys.
Okay.
So... Labor Day weekend, me and a group of friends went up to Packwood for some camping. And there was five of us. And after a day's worth of day drinking, we thought it would be a fun idea to go for a hike up to a waterfall.
No better idea could be had at that moment.
Nope. So it's a 3-mile walk into the waterfall. We get up there and... looking around, having fun, sitting by the water. Well, one of my friends got too close to the waterfall, and he slipped and fell 10 feet down the waterfall. We could barely hear him over the water. He was yelling for help. One of my other friends saw him, and he ran down there as fast as he could, and he slipped at the same spot that my other friend slipped on, and he fell down there with him. So there was three of us now, and
two lemmings and three people.
Yeah, we walked carefully to them, and we were assessing the situation, and there was another drop behind them. They fell into a little pool, and the drop behind them was at least 40 feet.
Oh.
So... we quickly decided what we needed to do. We all took our clothes off because we didn't have any rope or anything like that. And we tied all of our clothes together and we pulled them out one by one.
Was there any hot women in the group?
Oh, no. This is a soft.
Oh, that sucks. Bunch of naked dudes trying to pull a guy out of a waterfall.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if you just, like, had one naked woman with you, you know?
Depends on the woman.
Yeah, well, I mean, still. Like, you know, I mean, I feel like
it could be P.S. Chang.
That would be a pretty good addition. You get, like, 3 extra feet when the elastic, you know what I'm saying?
How long did it take to pull them out?
Probably about 10 to 15 minutes.
Where were you? Yeah, I've been there, man. That that's on the Cowlitz, right? That's a serious river.
Yeah, yep. And
I mean, I
tied all of our belts together and our jeans and our shirts, and we threw it down, and we told our friend not to move because this is MacGyvered. It's not going to hold if you fight it. So we're trying to pull him up, and as soon as he gets a grip, he tries to run up the waterfall, and the belts unloop. And he falls back down.
He didn't go over the 40-footer, did he?
No, he fell right back down into the 10-foot pool, and the friend that was still down there caught him. And then he had the belt in his hand. He threw it back up to us, and we tied it down again, and we just pulled him out again. And that time we said, go limp or you're going to die, because I don't think he's going to catch you again.
And he lost his erection in that moment.
Yeah, so pulled him up. He went limp all the way. We told him to crawl up, and he crawled all the way up back to the trail, about 800 feet. And then pulled out our other friend, and he was in so much shock. The first thing he said was, damn it, my cigarettes got wet.
Oh, he wasn't in shock.
That's a true smoker.
No, he wasn't
That's
in shock.
That's all that is. I mean,
he's just stating the facts.
I'm a smoker. I know it gets on people's nerves, but you're like, I got to run back into the burning home to get my fire.
Some people are like, my phone!
Nah, that's all right.
Yeah, who cares? Kenny's out here.
Can't smoke my phone to reduce stress.
Wait, a signal.
Especially if you're a smoker at that point, you really want that cigarette.
If ever there's a time you want a cigarette, it's when you think maybe you've escaped death.
Yeah.
He did seem to have a certain calm about him that would allow me to believe that he would be a good person in that situation.
Unless you needed everything expedited. You're right. It's good to keep calm, but if you need decisions made quickly, maybe not.
What scared you to death? 844-999-OLA. You are listening to the Men's Room Radio Network.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hola, bitches. You're listening to The Men's Room.
Bad jokes coming up. Email those bad jokes to The Men's Room at mensroomlive.com. We'll do the bad jokes right before we drink and toast with a shot of the day. Our question, what scared you to death? 844-999-OLA.
Hello, Dave. Welcome to The Men's Room.
Hola.
Hola.
So, I don't know if you guys ever heard of Shimmy Island.
Shimmy Island?
Shimmya. It's way out. Way out, Alaska.
It's going to shock you, but
radio
no.
On AM.
Isn't Alaska already way out to begin with?
Right, so it's way out from the place that it's way out.
Most people Alaska's have never even been there.
It's far.
Yeah. Okay.
We're talking Russian radio on AM. That's how far out it is.
All right.
Good morning, comrades.
Hello. Another so cold one.
We'd work for a month, and then we'd come home, and I got in trouble for a little excessive celebration on the last trip, and so I got left out of the next trip.
Who did you get in trouble with?
What's that?
Who did you get in trouble with?
With my manager.
Okay.
Because I'm working up there, right?
All right.
So I got left out of the next trip. Well, when the people that were up there just discovered I wasn't on the team, they wanted me back, and I got sent up by myself rather than being on the team as usual.
All right.
So I'm flying from SeaTac up to Anchorage and then from Anchorage out to Shimmya. And on the way up from SeaTac, I'm sitting on a plane, and, you know, I've gotten in trouble for drinking before, and so I, you know, of course I was drinking more on the plane. And they seated me between two guys that were on a coming up from California, so I'm seated right in between them, and they're all like, are you partying? Yeah, partying. So they ordered a couple doubles, and then the other guy ordered a couple doubles, and I ordered a couple doubles, and we're all just having a good old time. And all of a sudden, the guy on the aisle side reaches in his pocket and pulls out an envelope and dumps about a 5-inch wide by 3-inch tall pile of cocaine right on my tray.
He dumps this on...
Okay.
This is like 1989, right?
All right.
And I've never seen so much cocaine in my life. And all of a sudden, I went from being, you know, totally wasted to being totally sober, thinking I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to go to prison. This is very, very bad. And I'm trying to convince this guy to put it back in his pocket because we're going to get in so much trouble. I didn't want to deal with it.
But what are the odds of rationalizing with a person on a flight who dumps a mound of cocaine on the drink tray in your seat? I mean, at that point, I figure he's already so stupid. What am I going to say?
Yeah, well, I somehow convinced him that he was going to go to jail with me if he didn't get rid of it in a hurry. And so he's scooping all this stuff back up, and he gets it put away in his pocket. And by some miracle, nobody really noticed on the plane. Nobody said anything. But the entire time as I'm sitting there in my seat waiting for the cops to meet me at the door when I walk out of the plane.
Well, yeah. If I thought that was going to happen, the cops would have got a very excitable person. Like, if I feel like I'm going to go to jail, I'm going to do a bunch of hits.
I don't
below.
Think they had, like, a TSA agent on the planes back there at that point in time.
Maybe
once every few flights they put somebody on a plane.
Security was so much easier.
Yeah, obviously so, if you're bringing cocaine into the
in an envelope.
Right.
And was that pre, like, x-ray machine, maybe?
I think it must be pre-everything.
No, it was not ice. I knew a guy that smuggled a bird from the Bahamas into the States in spite of the fact that you could visibly see the skeleton, a moving skeleton inside of his bag.
He brought back a bird.
He brought back a bird. Now, again, this
well,
is pre-9/11.
Yeah, because you still got to go through customs. So customs is different than just walking into a regular airport, too.
Right, but he had, his carry-on. I don't understand how he did it, but he did it. I mean, that's the whole thing.
And yeah. If you're pre-9/11, I mean, you could just walk up to the gate.
Yeah, you could drop your kids off, you mm-hmm. could meet people, but most people still didn't say, hey man, I'm going to stuff an envelope full of
right,
cocaine.
Yeah.
Most, you're right.
I had a ton of weed on me when I was coming back from Jamaica, and right when we got to customs, there are dogs everywhere. And I mean, of course, at this point in time.
You know why? Because people like you come back from Jamaica.
I tried to smuggle weed back to Jamaica.
I didn't tell my wife that I had done this, obviously. You know, that wouldn't have been very cool. So, I mean, I am pitting. I mean, I am just like, it was one of those times in my life where I'm like, this was a bad idea. And so this dog comes running up to me, right? So I put both my hands on its head. I'm like, hi, buddy, how are you? And I start scratching. And I said, don't touch the dog. I'm like, I'm sorry. And I backed up. And I try to back as far away as I could from the dog. I'm still just sweating. And dog's just running around, going through everybody's stuff. Leaves me, starts smelling my shoes. That was about it. Leaves me alone. I'm like, oh, my God, that dog's an idiot. I mean, I've got it on me. You know what I mean? Like, I am petrified.
How did you try to sneak it in?
I did it in two ways. I had a couple of plans. I went to this one guy that I bought my weed from when I was down there, and I got a bunch of seeds from him.
All right.
So my plan was I was going to come back and grow some Jamaican weed.
Brilliant plan.
So I put all of the seeds.
Where were you living at this time?
I was living in Pasadena, Maryland.
Same climate.
Oh, thank you.
What's that?
Same climate.
Yeah, exactly. Pasadena, Maryland. I was going to grow it in a closet. You know what I mean? That was my plan. I had this grand plan, whatever. So I had the seeds in my shoes. And then, in the bottom of my shoes and like in the soles, like I dug out a little place in them and put the insoles back in. So I had the seeds in there. And then I had all the weed strategically put into golf clubs.
Okay.
And what I did was I brought my golf clubs down to play golf and I re-gripped my clubs. So I brought two extra grips because I had a plan. Because I had been told by someone who sounded and looked a lot like my father that I could pull this off. So what I did
but
was...
Not him.
But not him. But he looked a lot like him, and I was talking to him on the phone. He sounded just like him. So anyway, I take the grips off the clubs, and then I take all my finely ground-up weed, and I stick it down in the shaft.
Right.
And then, when I re-grip my clubs, I take some candle wax, I cap the top of the club, I put the new grips on, even though I know I'm taking those new grips off as soon as
sure,
I get home.
Sure.
Okay, I only have them in two wedges. So I've got two big shafts full of weed that I'm bringing back in my golf bag, which I'm also pulling because at this point in time, I've already picked up my luggage. Now I'm going through the customs. What do you have in your bags? I'm like, crap.
Right, right.
So I've got the weed in there. Long story short, I made it through. Here's the great part about this story. About 4 years later, all right, I'm in a bunker, okay? And I hit this shot, but I hit way far behind
sand
the ball,
bunker.
And it's wet. The bunker is wet. The sand bunker is wet, all right? And my club goes, dunk, and I hit this ball. And as I'm walking back to my bag, I feel like a rain stick inside of this club. Like, I didn't get all the weed out of there. You know what I mean? And so I didn't realize it. So I went home, and I got a coat hanger. You know what I mean? And I dug the rest of the weed out. It was still probably like an eighth in there.
Right.
4 years old from Jamaica. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting on my porch smoking Jamaica weed. And I'm just like, wow, man, this stuff still gets you high. It's so bizarre. It's like, I got weed in there. I could not wait to get home.
Right. Game's over.
Right. What scared you to death? 844-999-OLA.
Hello, Jeremy. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola.
Hola.
Alrighty, so back in about 96, me and my girlfriend at the time decided to take a trip down to Disneyland. We drove down there. And we stayed over in Buena Park the first night, and I didn't know what kind of neighborhood that was, being a 17-year-old white dude, shaved head, wearing a wife beater, dating a really hot Mexican. And we were walking to the little quickie mart to get something to drink about 1 o'clock in the morning. And right, maybe a block ahead, there was an intersection. And as soon as the light turned green, this black BMW turns the corner, shuts off all of its lights.
Always a great sign.
Yeah. And I traded spots with her because for some reason she was walking closer to the street. But so I switched spots with her. It comes rolling up with no lights on, all the windows down, and all I could see was five black dudes in the car, four of which had guns pointed at me, and the guy in the middle of the back seat said, "That ain't him."
Oh,
man, oh, man.
That ain't him.
Yeah, I actually looked down. I was like, "Good looking out, bro."
Thank you.
And the driver was like, "Are you sure?" And I'm like, "I ain't him."
Whoever he is, it ain't me.
Not him.
Yeah, and he probably had a bad day coming up after that. But, yeah, and then they just rolled up the windows, turned on their lights, and drove away.
And did you still go and get your drinks and your snacks or whatever?
Oh, I needed a Mountain Dew more than ever at that point.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Yeah, Mountain Dew. Yeah.
How was Disneyland?
You know, it was good, I guess.
Man, oh, man.
Well, there's a lot of weird places on that road. I mean, if you're driving from here to,
sure,
to California. I mean, Northern California would scare me just as much as anywhere else in this country.
They're open.
After
about
watching
it.
Murder Mountain and all that crap, I realized that that is a lawless area of the world.
I recently met some people that work down there, and they were like, they made it, well, everybody from a bad neighborhood says it's not as bad as it looked on TV.
But right, you know this to be true. You know that to be true. It's not as bad as it looks on TV. I get asked about Baltimore. Is it like The Wire? I'm like, nothing could sustain itself if The Wire were accurate. But there are parts of Baltimore that are exactly like The Wire. You still don't want to go. I mean, that's it. Like, man, it's not as bad as it looks on TV. Should I go? Hell no, brother. Do not. Do not go there. It's still not good. It's just not as bad.
No, we were, where did we make a wrong? We made a wrong turn kind of by Edgar Allan Poe's grave.
Mm-hmm.
Was it down near there?
Well, I don't want to be the next dead person.
And you're like, hey, man, you
were there at nighttime.
Yeah, and you were trying to
I've
be
been up there once in a day.
Yeah, I was trying to be cool, man, but like, you're white and where we are, this is not going to help either.
No, no.
Right? So it's like, hey, man, we need to get out of here.
Very quickly.
Because it's one of those spots in town where the cops don't even show up. It's just understood, like, if you go there, you're up to no good, or you're there to be killed. It's like, man, we got to go. Like, we've got to go.
I don't know how we got there. We
that matter.
Wrong turn.
Go. Just go up to that. Let me make a freaking right, man. We just got to go. Don't ask questions. Like, what's so bad about it? Like, Miles, just, man, do not be stupid right now.
Exactly.
I will tell you when we get out of here.
Now, that would be an interesting tour of a city.
Oh, the places you don't want to go at night?
Yeah, go to the places you don't want to go.
We're on a tour. Yeah.
We can go and spend...
This is the Greenbelt neighborhood of Baltimore. Do not light a cigarette anytime.
Now, listen, I'm not kidding. I lived in that city for 3 years. I've been in that place once during the daytime.
We could spend $150 and go ride roller coasters all day and feel that adrenaline rush, or...
What kind of adrenaline rush
do you want? You just drive down streets.
So, if you're an adrenaline junkie, right? Like, man, I bungee jump or I free climb... Would you run, like, through the bad neighborhoods? And it's got to be the same rush. And your odds of dying are roughly the same, right? Not everyone's going to try to kill you.
No. And I don't think that would be... But, like, you got to add in robbery. Like, there's other crimes that can be committed, not getting killed.
Sure. Well, chances are they're not going to kill you. They're just going to shoot you and mug you or take your stuff, right?
Yeah, like I was talking to a guy that like worked the door at this fancy hotel in Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was staying, but the hotel had a fancy bar up top. So you know me, I'm BSing with him, we're having a good time. And this other just kind of random drunk dude comes out and he's like, let me ask you, if I go to South Chicago, am I going to get killed? And the guy's like, you're not going to get killed, but you don't go down there. I'm thinking about going down. It's like 11 at night.
Why?
And he goes, why? And he's like, well, I think he just wanted to buy weed or something. And the guy was just like, no. Like, you can go down there, but, like, you're going to get robbed. Like, and why would you go down there?
You've heard...
You know it's a bad neighborhood. What is the...
Just asked. If you asked a question, you know the answer.
Yeah. And the hotel we were at was so nice. Like, I guarantee you this man does not really want to see that neighborhood. He thinks it's fun.
What scared you to death? 844-999-OLA.
You can like Chief Keef's music without seeing his neighborhood.
Right. Hello, Dalton. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, bitch, hola.
Hola. So when were you scared to death?
I was about 15 years old. My mom was the manager of some apartments out in Kent. And she'd like to play pranks on me from time to time. And we had a local resident there who was known for being a little crazy. He was a conspiracy theorist, just a wacky dude.
Okay.
They called him a cowboy. And basically, one day, I was in my room, and my mom came running in. She was frantic, panicking. She was like, I need your help. Come outside with me, please. And so I went running downstairs and went running outside with her. And then she takes me over to his apartment. And basically, when I come walking around the corner there, he's in one of those full body harnesses and he's hanging there. He looks like he's dead. It looked like he hung himself, basically.
A full body yeah, harness. What do you mean?
Is that something they use in like the haunted houses?
I mean, basically something they would use in the movies to make it look like somebody was hanging, but they're really strapped in around there.
Okay.
He had a jacket on and he was strapped around his.
Was this your mom playing a prank on you?
Yeah. She was pranking me. Wow, and I remember walking around the corner. I remember walking around the corner and I was just in shock. I lost all the air in my body. Like, I almost collapsed because it looked to me like this guy was hanging there dead in the middle of the hallway.
And your mom set this up for you to see.
What was that?
Your mom set this up intentionally for you to see.
Yeah. She thought it'd be funny and it just... basically traumatized me.
I mean, it's funny to me.
it's very funny
to me, right. But how long did it take for you to realize that it was a setup? I mean, did they break into laughter or what?
No, I mean, she was trying to convince me to walk up and help get him down, and I didn't want to go anywhere near him. I just stood there in shock, like I was just ghost white.
You mean the way someone would react if they turned the corner and there's a dead person hanging in the middle of the hall? Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. It was traumatizing, to say the least.
Does your mom still do these kinds of things?
Yeah. She'll still try and prank me from time to time. I don't fall for it much anymore. But
well, I mean, but how severe? Tell me, that's the most severe prank that she pulled on her child.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Okay.
Wow, that's man.
That's taking it to the next level.
I will say this: you know, as a parent, you have moments like, man, maybe I could do a better job. I'm fine. Right. You know, I mean, just like, look, maybe I've screwed up here and there, but I know it's never my intent. I would never be like, kids, come here. Look at this. Hanging dead.
Yeah, and I think it goes the same way. Like, when I was a kid, like, we pranked my mom once, and it really bugged her.
What was the prank?
God, it was stupid. Kids, feel free to use this one. Pour a little ketchup on your finger, slam the door, and start crying like it got caught in the door.
Oh, dude. Come on. That's too easy.
Right, but it really bugged her. But so that's at that point, too easy. We stopped pranking her and just started
doing it. I'll tell you right now.
But we pranked my dad as much as we could.
If my kids do that, I'm getting someone hanging in their bathroom.
Well, the problem
you
is...
You guys fake me with blood. There's going to be a corpse in
your
bathroom.
As a parent, the only thing you care about is your children. So you don't care if your own finger got cut off. If you cut your own finger off, you're like, we got to go to the hospital. But if it was your finger that you even just scratched, you're like, okay.
Right,
you're freaking. But that's what I'm saying. It's like that guy saying, like, his mom stopped. Like, that's when I was like, we can't do this to mom. We harassed dad on one.
But you guys did not try to convince your mother that one of you is dead.
No,
right?
We never took it that far.
You don't want your kid to get injured, but I feel much... Look, one of the most heart-stopping moments of my life, and I've said this before, my daughter, when she was like 2 years old, somebody got her one of these American Girl dolls. If you don't know what they are, consider yourself lucky. If you do, you know why I hate them. So,
and why your bank account does.
Good God, that's a racket. Anyway, somebody got... And we specifically said, do not get her one of these. So, of course, they got her one. But she picked a doll that looks like her, right? And at that time, about the same height, same complexion, same hair. She left it laying face down in the middle of the hall. But I don't realize it's the doll. So I'm up late. It's like 2 in the morning. Finished watching TV. I turn in the hall, and basically I just see the silhouette of my daughter motionless face down in the hallway. Man, I'm telling you, my adrenaline spikes like your eyes already water up. I run there. I realize it's a doll. And in this moment that I so desperately wanted my daughter to be okay, within 1 second, I'm like, I'm going to kill her. I'm going to her bedroom and beat her to death.
What scared you to death? 844-999-OLA. You are listening to the Men's Room Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back to the Men's Room with Miles and Thrill.
A lion who attacked a man on a wildlife area in South Africa was recorded in graphic video has been killed. The News 24 media outlet reported on Wednesday that a staff member at Marikel Predator Center in a province killed the lion after it mauled Michael Hodge, the owner of the facility.
He was at a place called the Predator Center?
He owned the Predator Center. Okay. And he went into one of those cages. The graphic and potentially upsetting footage, which is being viewed all over the internet, shows Hodge walking in an enclosure behind a lion and then running for an exit when the lion turns and chases him. The lion quickly drags him toward some bushes. And when we say quickly, we mean like it seemed like a half a second. In the video, Hodge seems to look around and kick up a little dirt before turning to leave, at which point the creature senses him and turns around to face him. Hodge, whose face has been blurred in the footage, then tries to sprint for the door, but is caught by the massive cat, which drags him away as he pleads and begs for help. Another man is heard shouting, "Someone get a rifle, just in case," while a terrified woman begins to cry and screams, "Please help my dad. Somebody help my dad." Hodge is then dragged out of view of the camera and into the bushes while gunshots are heard. Police spokesman said the man who was attacked is in intensive care with jaw and neck injuries, but he did survive. What scared you to death? 844-999-OLA.
I wouldn't say the video's graphic. You don't see the lion do anything except drag him. You know what's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, nothing pretty's going to happen, but it wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
Hello, Thomas. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, bichola.
Hola.
How you guys doing?
Good, Thomas. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Cool. Okay. This was back when I was, I'd say, 21, 22. My first car.
Hey, Thomas, can you turn your radio? Hey, can you turn your radio down?
No problem.
Thank you.
Hearing Miles' voice is really great.
30 seconds later is driving me nuts. Even my own voice annoys me.
We have to listen to you all the time.
I know, 4 hours a day. Okay, go ahead.
This was when I was 22. I was on my way driving to my friend's job at Circuit City, getting ready to buy a new car radio. So as I'm coming going to the freeway, I noticed a gas tanker truck doing the same thing as I'm doing. But as I'm trying to merge on, in front of me, what I thought I saw was a good distance enough for me to get in front of it. wound up not being that. So me and my little 2006 Nissan Sentra, I'm trying to push this car going 80. By the time I reach the entry point, it completely closes, and I just pounce on the brake. I'm on the right side of a slanted metal 60 by 40-degree guardrail, and I crash right into it. Meanwhile, the gas tanker truck just careens right on the left side of my car, popping both my front tires, also busting my driver's side mirror. And I'm like, holy sh!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Right.
If I would have went a little bit more in front of it, I would have caused an accident. Not only that, 20 minutes later after the accident, I found out that the gas tanker truck was leaking fuel.
Ooh, oh, geez, yeah, that would have gone very well. Yeah. But did you get your radio after all?
No, yeah, but I did end up getting a new car a few months later.
Yeah.
Does that memory cross your mind every time you see a tanker truck on the road?
Every single time.
I had one cut me off this morning.
I am way behind the gas tanker truck.
I don't know if it was milk, though.
Having one driving next to me and I see the reflection, I see myself in my Nissan Sentra like, no.
Yeah, there's nothing. No. I mean, I had two Nissan Sentras. There's nothing wrong with that car. Just not probably the car you want to be in that kind of accident.
What car could you be in that kind of accident where you feel any better? I mean, going up against
a
truck.
I think a bigger car would be more helpful. Not that it's going to change the game that much, but, you know, it's like the old adage, man. If you wanted to get your 16-year-old kid a car, you buy one that's like 10 years old and 55 feet long so they won't die.
See, that's one advantage we had when we were growing up. The hand-me-down essentially was a tank.
This
is a 1975 Pontiac. Like, they were bulletproof.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what you did. They would never get a dent.
Half of my friends had cars that were basically not the best with gas mileage or anything else. They were solely for the safety of the driver.
Bonnevilles.
Yeah, stuff like that.
You don't realize it at the time.
Like, big-ass cars. Like, all my friends had really old, big-ass cars. Everyone had the same philosophy. He's 16 years old. He doesn't need anything new. He needs something that's big and safe because he's going to crash it anyway.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed, man.
You know?
The only way to lose that car is for it to rust.
What scared you to death? 844-999-OLA.
Yeah, I told you, like, my buddy Weave had a Bonneville.
Mm-hmm.
It was big. And my brother had one.
Like, it's big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, I'm willing to bet you two at some point had a friend that had one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody had big cars.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, I have Capri Classics.
Old,
I mean,
Plymouth.
Yeah, you name it, man. If it was like you could put 900 people in it, and that was a pro, you know, back then with friends that didn't drive and everything. That was a good thing.
Some of the only two-door cars, you can fit 12 people.
Exactly. Four people in the back seat, easy. You got a bench seat in the front, so you can put three up there.
And three in the trunk.
Yeah, why not? What scared you to death? 844-999-OLA. More calls coming up in seconds.
Ola, the shenanigans continue on the Men's Room Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.